you know, usually we begin with a little banter, if you will. Mm-hmm. But I think today we'll get right into it.
Okay, we're Tom. Now we have Danette Gorman and Noah Reibel to talk about what's happening in Kettermeyer.
Wait. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
We're so glad you're here.
We are, too. Thank you.
I get up to close to the mic, as you know, I'm sure.
I've been wanting to catch up with you.
Really?
Here
is
you
that
are.
True?
Yes, and I've had Danette's number in this folder for a long time. And then when I really wanted it, I couldn't find it.
A paper folder?
A paper folder.
Oh, you don't know Ellen. You so don't know Ellen.
I do.
Ellen has,
a
garage.
You think that's quaint, don't you?
I love it. Yeah, I do.
She does think it's great. When I assumed my new office, yeah. I got some of her back folders.
I did.
Yeah, she said
no,
she gave them to
me. No, you didn't.
Yeah, she did. You gave me your folder on...
Oh, you mean ones that were full of paper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You gave me folders.
That's right, I did.
And I cherish them.
Conflict of interest.
This is a
what
whole
else?
Folder, including little clips from the New York Times. How cute is that? How cute is that?
I love it.
Like clipping the New York Times.
Well, where do you put your clippings anyway?
I put them in a folder on my email.
Oh.
Or whatever. I don't know. I don't take.
Your
I don't.
Email,
I don't make clippings. There's something called a search engine. I don't know. AOL maybe has it.
I've had too many problems with my computer lately to trust it. I do not trust it.
Yeah,
anymore.
Yeah. There's little people in there, I know. But let's get to the serious business of why our guests are here.
Yes.
To change the tone here, because
well,
we're going to get a little
Noah
serious.
Noah called and said, would you like to have us on your program? Well, that Noah, was one reason.
Well, no, I saw Noah the other day. You know, it's a small little city here in Hudson. I ran into Noah, and he was telling me, he gave me a little update on what's happening with the project. Mm-hmm. Which, let's backtrack. Because you've been on before, but let's explain what it's all about.
Sure. This one?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. This can come forward.
Yes,
can it?
Can,
I remember
yeah.
from last time. Can I use yours? This is so much easier. Thank you.
Oh, there you go.
Right. So I guess to backtrack, let's see. I became aware of this refugee camp back in March of 2017 and was immediately drawn to visit these children, and that all started there.
Syrian
right?
refugees.
This was Syrian
in
refugee
Lebanon.
Children in Kettermeyer, Lebanon. And within 4 or 5 weeks, I got a mission going through the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson. Catherine Belke, who's our pastor, was phenomenal and said, let's do this. Let's leap at the chance. So we got some supplies together, and I got on a plane and visited the children for the first time in April. And then it all just, I think, fast forwarded from there. And we started a pen pal program with the Hudson Intermediate School. We did the Basilica event to show the film in August of 2017, which was really successful.
I sat right next to that man right there, Noah Reibel.
You did?
Mm-hmm. That's
you did.
Right. I think that yeah. was his first interest in it, right? Or not?
That was the first time I'd seen that film. Yeah. You know?
Okay. Yeah. Continue, please.
Yeah. And no, I think... All in all, I'm probably more passionate to support the children than ever. I think, you know, what we've done since that point is pretty terrific in terms of just continuing support. So we got a lot of awareness within Hudson. I'm still very passionate about connecting the children of Hudson with the children in Kettermeyer. So the pen pal letters that were written from the schools are just unbelievable, beautiful letters introducing themselves, and also... the children made friendship bracelets, Hudson Kettermeyer Connection friendship bracelets, and Juan Dharma Center donated things. So we made a second trip November of this year and brought all of those things. So thank you. November of this year has not occurred, right? So November 2017. And I feel like that, and I'll let Noah talk about how we met, but it was really amazing to deliver all of these things, and we also were able to deliver food and hygiene products for 58 families on that trip. So it was truly remarkable to see the kind of the gratitude and the impact that it had, not just on the needs, those basic needs that they, you know, so desperately were looking for or seeking, but also for the spirit of the children and the parents that, you know, exist for some of the children were just really expressive about, you know, thank you for remembering our children. Thank you for making them feel happy. Thank you for giving them hope. And they read those letters that we had them all translated with so much, and they just like every single word, and just loved the bracelet. So it was a really positive thing.
Could I ask, you were trying to set up classes for the kids so that they could carry on their education. Did that continue?
We haven't gotten that done yet. It's still a top priority, and hopefully this next event we're going to talk about is going to give us a little more visibility, a little more power to get some visibility on the map to get that
achieved. Now,
one
of the problems I understand that you have is you're kind of out of the network of existing NGOs who already help Syrian refugees. Is that correct?
We're out of the network, and there's thousands and out of the network. I mean,
because
I think we'd love to know the answer, and I'll let Noah's done a lot of research on that, and I'll let him talk about it. But there's, you know, over 1,000 camps that don't have governmental support in Lebanon, so it's a huge problem.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know until we got back that the UN was never formally invited into Lebanon to set up camps. There are the UN presence is there, but I think because of the history of Lebanon and the fact that the country took so many Palestinian refugees and then it was politicized, the government never formally invited the UN to come in. And that's in contrast to a country like Jordan, where I guess there are the UN was formally invited. This camp is about 40 kilometers south of Beirut. It's in a Shia region of Lebanon. We also stayed a night or two in the Bekaa Valley, which is on the other side of the mountains. And many of the camps there are even larger because that's closer to the Syrian border.
Now, the refugees are Sunni or Shia themselves, mostly?
I'm not sure we ever found that out.
Oh,
really.
That doesn't figure into the problem.
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, maybe. We're not sure. I know that after we got back, I did wind up talking to a UNHCR field rep for this region of Lebanon who mentioned that services to this particular camp had been cut off some time ago. We're not entirely sure why, but one of our hopes is that in this upcoming trip, which we're very excited about, we'll be able to touch base with some of the humanitarian agencies on the ground and see if we can't restore some critical services. When we were there in November, we were able to purchase some supplies out of the fund that Danette started and distribute them and distribute these letters. And then also we did some testing of the water with some mobile field kits we had been given, because the toilets and bathrooms and wash facilities were in bad shape, and there were sort of garbage burn piles strewn all over the place. So we're hoping to reach out to a few people while we're there on this trip. And Danette can talk about, because Danette has been amazing about just arranging this opportunity that we're going back for in a week. And maybe I'll let her talk about that.
How many children in the camp?
140.
And there's only a handful of adults, right? Or
300 total. So the balance is 160.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There's fewer. Okay.
Yeah.
It's mostly women, though, right? Or not?
Not necessarily. Okay. Well, would you say, Dom, in terms of adults? Yes, yeah. I guess so.
Yeah, it seems to be children, and then there's people who are, would we refer to as maybe seniors, you know, and some of them are parents and some of them are guardians. Mm-hmm. And then there are women, you know, and mothers there. There weren't a lot of young men there.
Okay.
And then maybe
so, Jeanette, go ahead and tell us.
Yeah, it's very exciting. So my husband saw a piece on NPR about a famous musician. His name is Kenan Azmeh, K-I-N-A-N-A-Z-M-E-H. Definitely YouTube him. He's a phenomenal musician. And he's a Syrian living in New York for about 15 years. He's a Juilliard graduate. And he had done a musical workshop for Syrian refugees in New Jersey. And it was a really beautiful story. And he said, you know, Danette, you really should try to get in touch with Kenan. So long story short, I reached out to him and he responded. We had a really lovely phone call. And I told him a little bit about Ketermaya, and pardon me, he said that his next trip to Lebanon, he does a world tour. He'd love to go and do a workshop with the children. And I said, that's phenomenal. So I just couldn't imagine, you know, the possible transformation of having these children experience a musician of that, you know, quality. And so ended up going to one of his shows in Brooklyn with my husband, and we spoke in person, got to see him perform. It was a beautiful event sponsored by the IRC. Which he's very involved with.
Which is what?
International Rescue Committee.
Okay.
And he basically and I kept in touch, and his wife is Lebanese, I've since learned. So he does kind of some special touring there. And he was going to go in January to be at the camp, and things fell through. So we kept in touch, and lots of things have progressed. So he's going back to Lebanon. He's part of an Imagine workshop. I put this on the Help Serious Kids Facebook page earlier today. This is he's basically part of the a guest musician, I guess, as part of the series. And it's founded by another famous musician, Siba Ali. She's Egyptian. She's on the faculty at the Lebanese American University. Mm-hmm. And she has pioneered this beautiful mission to bring artists and culture, musicians, host concerts, different things in support of, I'll just simplify it and say, world peace and supporting children, because it's enormous. I mean, you have got to read about what she does. It's just unbelievable. So I read about this. I connected with Keenan again. He said, Danette, I'm going to be so busy in Beirut at this event, and I just really want to get to see the kids, but I don't know how I'm going to pull it off. And I said, Keenan, let me make this really easy. Why don't we bring some of the children to you? Of course, I didn't know how on earth I was going to pull that off or if I could. But I said, why don't we just said, that's a brilliant idea. So fast forward, what he figured out is, you know what? I love it. Let's bring some of the children to participate in this concert. So what's happening now, I mean, 24-hour news information is that we're basically going to have the approval to bring about 50 of the children from Kedar Maya on a bus to Lebanese American University on the 15th of February. And they're all going to be there to participate in this event with another 250 other refugee children from other camps in Lebanon as part of kind of this concert series called Salam, which means peace. And that's all I know about the event. But as you can imagine, I'm really excited about it.
You think they'll do something choral or something like that?
They're going to be singing.
What instrument does he play?
Very good question. You must YouTube him. He is a clarinetist. So Keenan Asmay is a clarinetist, and his work is just amazing. He's also, I should mention, he is part of the Yo-Yo Ma Silk Road Ensemble. So he does a lot of different, he's always on world tour, and I know he's going to be debuting a piece, I think, called The Event. It's also posted on their Facebook page. So this is clearly a really beautiful story and opportunity to really present hope, right? Present connection, present the possibility of transformation. Because what I'm believing for is in the minds of these 50 children, you know, just being on the bus going to something in Beirut, just walking into a university, just having the respect of looking around at other children to connect, you know, with other refugee children that have gotten this opportunity to be part of a peace event about peace, you know, and sing, which they love to do, is just mind-blowing to me, really. It's just mind-blowing. And just what goes on in each of their minds, we'll never know, but like what that's going to seed for them in the belief in their, you know, future. Tom, are you gesturing for me to stop talking?
No, I'm gesturing for me. I'm looking at,
Yeah, look him up, please. It's incredible.
I am.
There's one other thing. Yeah, there's one other thing I wanted to share about the event that's super exciting as well, is that I have all of these beautiful letters from the Hudson Intermediate School. And all the teachers there, the fifth grade teachers and second grade, are just outstanding. And they created these templates of, they have like New York City landmarks. So they've colored them. So they're colorful with the words. And Siba said to me, you know, Danette, I want to have letters and pictures from the refugee children kind of featured as people come into the auditorium. And I said, well, Siba, I have like 140 beautiful letters in English that I can contribute. She's like, that's amazing. So in addition, we're going to be able to showcase, you know, some of the letters that the children have written here in our community and, you know, a Lebanese American University in Beirut. It's incredible. Yeah, right? It's just kind of takes my breath away a little bit. There you go.
So how do you fund all these projects of yours? The bus. Who's paying for the bus?
Well, Danette started a charity through First Presbyterian Church, and it's you can go to helpseriouskids.org. There's a donate button there. You can also mail a check to the Kedar Maya Fund, care of the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson.
Do you want to spell that, by the way?
Kedar Maya?
Yeah.
Is K-E-T-E-R-M-E-Y. Is it A-Y-A? Yeah. Okay.
Kedar Maya.
Kedar Maya Fund. And so, but those funds, to the degree that we've been able to raise some, really go specifically to expenses that are camp related. So this past trip, it was really just vital stuff, food and hats and supplies. And this time it sounds like, well, Danette has been in touch with the wife of the landowner here, to get a sense of what's needed. So there's fuel and stuff like that. And as far as, you know, as far as our expenses going over there, I mean, we cover.
It's all makeshift housing, and I mean, there's nothing permanent there, right? I mean, it's all kind of, I mean, there's no plumbing or.
Yeah, the infrastructure was interesting to me too, because I hadn't been to a, I had been to one small camp in another situation, but I hadn't been to one in this area. They're tarp covered frames. Mm-hmm. Most of them have a stove for heating, and there is a little bit of infrastructure at this camp. One charity that I think is a Saudi charity donated a little play area. And there is a generator that was donated either by the Kuwaitis or the Saudis, I'm not sure. And that runs some electricity at night, and there's a little bit of power. But it is like these little villages that have grown up, because we saw larger ones in the Bekaa Valley. I mean, they are small towns and small cities that pop up throughout Lebanon. I mean, there are 1.1 million refugees. Mm-hmm. In Lebanon, in a country of 6 million people, that's the equivalent of how many people live in the United States. Yeah. That would be the U.S. would have to take a lot more than they're taking.
I did you get a chance to read that article in the New York Review I mentioned?
I did, yeah.
And that was interesting because I think one of the points the author made was that there are children now growing up in these refugee camps who have never really spent much time in their country of origin. Mm.
Yeah.
So they have this whole skewed view of the world based on that.
Yeah.
And what home is.
Yeah.
Yeah, what their heritage, true heritage is. Yeah. I think that's complicated. I just wanted to add, I didn't want to cut you off, by going to anything about education. I want to get back to that question because that's really paramount. I mean, survival and all of these things is important, but education has always been the primary mission. And so what I have my eye on is a fund that I became aware of. It's the MacArthur Foundation provided a grant of about $100 million in December to the Sesame Workshop and the IRC as a partnership specifically for Syrian refugee children education in Iraq, Jordan, and Lebanon. So I became aware of that. It's kind of a mouthful. I became aware of that through someone local in Hudson, Miranda Berry.
Mm-hmm.
And she,
yeah.
You know, was,
sure,
I
know Miranda. She's been on the show.
I'm sure.
Everybody important's been on this show. Sure. Let me tell you.
I'm sure. Yeah. I was lucky enough to meet her at the library gala. And mm-hmm. So we had a connection about what I was doing with Kenner Maya. So she shared that information. And I obviously was like, this is absolutely unbelievable. Like, this is incredible. So, you know, in the back of my mind, of course, it's how on earth do I get on the radar of this massive fund? And you know, you never really have the answers, but I feel like this is just a really special opportunity to have a story, you know, a piece about hope and promise. And it's a camp that's small and a lot mm-hmm. of impact can be made here. And it's really special. I mean, I can't speak as an expert about refugee camps. I mean, that would be silly, but I can tell you as a humanitarian, you know, from a humanitarian point of view, when you experience the energy of the children together, it's very special. They're a family. Like I said on the last time we spoke, they're like they're each other's family, and they're in this together. And I feel like with just a little bit of support, like miraculous things can happen in their lives, and they can mm-hmm. really become the kind of people to change the world, you know, because they can be given that opportunity, because they have that seed of hope. Waking up every day with absolutely mm-hmm. nothing. They have that seed of hope, you know, so just give them a little bit of a something to change the trajectory of what is, you know, their life is about. So that's a big.
And of course, perhaps one of the downsides, if there isn't positive intervention, is that they could be the radicals of the future who are so disillusioned
that's
by the
true.
World that they go in a different direction.
That's very true. And I think I certainly, my view on that is that every second is a chance to make a change, and I'm going to mm-hmm. do everything I can with every second, you know, to push something positive. And even some of the kids have said to me, we won't, like, we won't let you down. Not that that sounds ridiculous, but they want to kind of honor, you know, what they're seeing. They almost want to match what they're seeing, and like they perceive this as a gift maybe or an opportunity. And so, sorry to dominate.
That's all right. No. I just need to interrupt you for a second. I'm going to do what we fail to do every half hour because we're supposed to, and that is identify ourselves. This is the Thursday Afternoon Show with the great Ellen Thurston and me, Tom DiPietro. 90.7 FM on your dial, Acre, Hudson, Catskill. Ellen, where else can people hear us? Let's say you're in Lebanon. Where could you hear us?
WGXC.org.
That
on
is
my
correct.
Computer, my device.
That's right.
That I would have with me.
And you saw that business about the new apps. Where I don't really understand what an app is, but there's now you can do like all this incredible stuff
all
on your
over
phone,
the world.
On your
all
phone.
Over the world.
You can like make an archive of our show. Can you imagine that? You could probably like be in, like, let's say Noah gets nostalgic when he's over there in the camp and wants to remind himself what the Thursday Afternoon Show was like. He can make a little archive and listen to the show. Pretty incredible, huh? Okay.
I probably won't do that, but I will use the Google. I will use the Google Translate app, which has improved. And we, you know, in Beirut and with people we already knew in Bekaa, pretty much everyone spoke English. I was surprised to learn that a lot of education is in English in Lebanon, as well as French. So most people speak three languages. But down in the camp, it was really Arabic. And with the landowner at this camp, he speaks Arabic solely. And so we actually used Google Translate, which now has a voice component and a place where the kids even could write on your phone in Arabic, and then it translates back into
incredible.
English. So it was actually really useful because we had one person with us who was able to do some translating, but she was usually with Danette, and I was using Google Translate with Ali Tafish talking about the condition of the toilets.
Wow.
So it's kind of amazing.
Let's get down to basics.
Yeah.
You know, I'm old enough to remember when Lebanon was considered like the great cosmopolitan country of the Middle East, where all these different groups got along. And then it just like, I can't use the phrase, went to something. But, you know, all those groups suddenly, with the help of some foreign intervention, just imploded.
You do see some remnants of that. And you also hear the heartbreak in the Lebanese people we met who could either remember that or their parents remembered it. And
they're not super thrilled about now a second wave of immigrants. I mean, first they had the Palestinians, which kind of brought, you know, what happened after that, the invasion by Israel, all this other stuff, and now...
Well, understandably, I mean, these are small countries. They're stretched to begin with, and they're absorbing problems that were made, arguably, by...
By others.
Us, Russian, and other people, and their proxies, and the Saudis, and the Iranians, but primarily the U.S. invasion of Iraq, and they wind up footing the bill and absorbing the problem, and in terms of the Palestinian issue, when the Palestinian refugees came in 48, I mean, that those places, because they were never allowed to acclimate into Lebanese society, a lot of the issues that wound up resulting in the civil war in the 1980s grew out of those camps, and those camps are still there, you know. They're more like city neighborhoods now, you know. So it's an interesting place. But in terms of this trip, I agree with, I just have to second what Danette said, which is it's going to be amazing to watch these kids' faces because I don't think they get an opportunity to venture far from the camp to begin with. I mean, they can come and go from the camp freely, but the camp itself is about 5 miles outside of just this small village, Kedermaya, and there's not much in this village to do. So to see what they see when they're brought to Beirut, to the Lebanese American University, to a concert, and to see if that... And then the other hope is also to start creating relationships between a place like the university and this particular camp, because exactly what Danette was saying and Ellen was asking about, making connections between this place and educational institutions, or someone who will continue to check in on certain things and hopefully start some relationships that may... that may bear fruit in the future. You're never sure what will happen.
Now, people can follow this whole adventure on Facebook, right?
Yep, we have.
And what's the Facebook page?
A couple of things. Oh. Yeah, no, the Facebook is Help Serious Kids.
Help Serious Kids.
And then the website is Help Serious Kids with no apostrophe. You asked me that last time. I didn't answer it correctly. Help Syria, SYRIASKids.org. And there's a donate button on the page. And I just want to clarify in terms of action, you know, what can you do and what are we looking for and why? Is we're currently raising funds for these really basic needs like fuel and some food items. I have to say the hygiene was enormous for them, the diapers and for women, sanitary napkins. I mean, they just were so grateful. I worked with the camp founder to get the sizes they needed for all the different ages of the children. A lot of the older children, I mean, when Lucas was on with me in August, we talked about this. They have, you know, very serious bedwetting problems from trauma at the ages of 5 and older children. And the mothers look at me like, we can't do anything about this. And it's really painful for the child. It's painful for the mother. So to be able to supply those, and it was just wonderful. They were extremely grateful. So those are the kinds of things that we're funding. We're buying them in country, so they're really quite economical. We found a great vendor. Mm-hmm. We spent 10 hours, maybe something. It was long. I mean, it seemed like how could you spend that many hours at a vendor, but we did, right? to get the numbers together, and yeah.
And that probably solves the other problem of bringing in stuff that could sometimes be difficult, right?
We've never done. The only thing I've ever hand-carried is letters and gifts and toys, but those are the things we're funding on top of those are really the core things. And then just for this trip, the bus trip, you know, and we're going to have like a picnic on the bus. It's going to be amazing. And have like, we're going to sing songs. Did I tell you this? We're going to sing songs. We're going to have we're going to have to learn the songs in Arabic. No, it's just going to be so fun for the kids.
How long is the bus
probably
trip?
An hour. We'll probably go rather slow.
It'll be longer if I start singing. I think I'll listen to the music, but it depends. I mean, you know, one of the, there were a lot of things that were revelations to me about traveling in Lebanon, but the traffic is, there are no streetlights really in Lebanon, or even addresses in some ways. Yeah. And you go in parts of Beirut, but even a lot of Beirut, there are no traffic lights. So a lot of traffic is hollering out your window.
So the Lebanese government, They're not an impediment to what you do there at all. I mean, you can travel freely there.
Absolutely.
And
I've told other people, I've been to a lot of countries with and had a visa. I've never had an easier time, felt more welcome walking in. I mean, when you leave, they say, you know, they say come again soon. When you're coming in, they say welcome back. I mean, they're very warm. I mean, honestly, I think that they are grateful for whatever help that they get. You know, it's true. That's how I feel about it.
I think, you know, it could be, we did have an easy time. There were a lot of checkpoints coming over the mountains, and we were traveling with friends of ours, or friends of Danette's, really, who were Lebanese, who sort of knew which way to go. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give the impression, I mean, we were probably missing a lot of cues, and at one point we did screen this documentary with the director, the guy, and in some other cities. And after we had been there, he invited us up there to answer questions as well. And there were two Syrian reporters who had come through Lebanon on their way out to Paris, actually, who we were asked, did you feel safe walking, you know, around in this country? And I, like Danette, said, you know, I never felt uncomfortable there, partly because we were traveling with people who knew the terrain, but I wasn't nervous. But one of the Syrian reporters said, oh, well, that's because you're not Syrian. And he had a point, which is that because, you know, we're because of our passports, because we were traveling with Lebanese, it's different for Syrians. There is an element of the civil war right now that involves Hezbollah fighting on behalf of Assad. Mm-hmm. And Hezbollah is a Shia organization that was founded in Lebanon in 1982. And it's fracturing now, partly over this issue, but for them, when they were in Beirut coming out of Syria, they felt threatened just neighborhood to neighborhood, depending on what signs and signals they saw and graffiti and things that we don't necessarily read.
Does it frustrate you at all? This is for both of you. Does it frustrate you at all that this really ultimately needs a political solution? I mean, do you feel like, you know, we're struggling here doing this, but
I don't No, it doesn't frustrate me.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons why I got involved was because, like most people, we've been watching this horror unfold for the past 5 years, and you feel largely powerless because of the political impasse. I mean, in my opinion, once a government starts indiscriminately bombing that has a monopoly of force, starts indiscriminately bombing and killing their population, mm-hmm. that's the red line. That's when you intervene. And I thought it was a shame that, and other people can disagree. I understand that there were reasons why Obama felt like he was trying to get out of that region to mm-hmm. begin with. But what winds up happening is you wind up watching this on your TV and on your screens in horror at what's mm-hmm. going on. And then it can feel like, all right, well, it's too late. Certainly there's no moderate elements left in right. Syria. But what impressed me so much about Danette was that that didn't deter her from saying, I can do something small.
Yeah.
And see where that leads, because it can mm-hmm. lead to bigger mm-hmm. things.
Sure.
And I was glad, and that was largely why I jumped on, because I had been looking for something. I actually had contacted Lucas, the director of this documentary, to see if he had worked with any agencies that I might volunteer with while I took some time off. And that was what led to me meeting Danette, and what led to me thinking, okay, well, this is a great way to just do it without asking permission from right. a billion different agencies.
That's true. Yeah, that is cool.
What's happened to the film? Has it...
I was going to add to that. To answer about the film, I was going to say, first of all, Lucas, who was with me on the last show, mm-hmm. he's edited the film a bit. And I've had Melissa at Basilica on the Wednesday March said to me, you know, we'd love to do another event this summer. And I actually am kind of asking people, if you're interested in seeing the film or any updates to the film, if you go to Help Syria's Kids, you know, the Facebook just messaged me.
With
if you're
the apostrophe.
Interested.
That's the one with the apostrophe.
Yes.
Right? Okay. I just want to make sure.
Thank you for calling that, because it's been updated. It's been kind of corrected. There was some dated information about education, and I've had some people ask about the film, and he's continued to show it in different festivals. And that's where Noah went to a festival in Paris. We went to. That's where we met. And there was a festival in Barcelona where the film was featured, and that's where I met Noah. Lucky for me, lucky for Noah, we met
Wait,
each other, and now
you
we're
met
helping
in Barcelona.
Them. Yeah,
you know
we
from
did.
There?
It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. So you didn't when we went to the screening, you didn't know Danette at that point?
No, and oh, for okay. some reason, I didn't see. Maybe I either arrived late or left maybe too
were
early.
Were you inspired
to
by
see.
Sitting next to me during that whole thing?
I'm always inspired sitting next to you.
Oh, thank you, Noah.
And
see,
also,
Alan? See?
And yeah. also, yes, the movie was part of what made me think, okay. Get off your butt and try mm-hmm. to do something yeah. during sure. this time you had all I had already sort of parsed out a time when I was going to take some time off, and then I was mm-hmm. like, you know what, you don't need time off mm-hmm. you need to go find something to do.
I think I just wanted to add yourself. If I have a couple minutes yeah sure. I wanted to add to your point about, you know, does it frustrate you that there's this is a political problem, because I come at this from a very different place. I am not a political person. I obviously know what's going on in the world to a degree, but I really come at this from simply a humanitarian point of view. And when I saw the film, as I'm listening to Noah say, you know, you took some time, and that's amazing. So lucky that that worked out. I know when I saw the film, it couldn't have been a worse time for me to consider going to the Middle East. It was just like almost absurd. But it was such a moving connection for me. Just this is something I must do. And mm-hmm. I see children in this community that need help in, I won't say the same levels, but in very great degrees, right? And I'm involved with those children. So this for me is true. That's why I love this. The Hudson-Kettermaya connection is something that I haven't done enough with it yet, but I firmly believe in it, because I believe in the connection. I believe in the children. I believe that in everywhere in the world, these things are happening, regardless of if you're part of this horrific war. And have had to flee your. I mean, these things are unthinkable for most people. But what I believe in a child's mind is what they deal with every day, right? It is could be war to them, you know, mm-hmm. losing a parent, having a drug addicted, you know, mother. These things are happening every single day around us, and I see it as, you know, something that I need to. I just want to be involved in. I think there's millions of people like myself that want to be. So I see the children. I don't pity them. I see them as beautiful children that deserve a chance, the same way I look at some children in this community that I think deserve a chance.
Well, that's
right?
That's going to be a great segue to our second part of the show today at 5, where we're going to be talking to people involved with the Raising Places Project, which is also focused, in this case, on the children of Hudson. And, you know, that's been the bigger project for Raising Places, how to make Hudson a more welcome place for families and children. So that's our theme today, Ellen. We didn't even know it. We didn't even know it.
We didn't. Aren't we lucky?
We are darn lucky. You know.
No, really.
I agree. I'm not being sarcastic. Are you?
I didn't think so.
Anyway, we're going to say goodbye to our guests. And, you know, while we say goodbye to them, we're going to play some of Kenan Azmé. Oh, here he is with Yo-Yo Ma. That's going to be cool.
Well, there's one clip.
Go ahead. Sorry.
One is an interview, and the other clip is just him playing at Tanglewood, actually, last year, one of his things. So I didn't know which I sent you two.
I'm not sure I have the one you sent me. I have just one I found. But thanks anyway.
All right.
Let's say goodbye, Ellen, to... Go ahead.
Goodbye, Ellen.
No, you're really on today, aren't you? To Noah Reibel.
Thanks for having
Gorman,
us.
Yep.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Yes, give the Facebook name again.
HelpSyriasKids.org.
Thank you. .org.